It's The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, in this week for Tanzina Vega. Good to have you with us today. Standing at over 7 feet tall, flying under the radar was never really an option for NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I remember reading something that Charles de Gaulle said. He was a tall man, and he said that little people get to sneak around in crowds, whereas tall people, they're immediately identifiable, and their whole public demeanor and appearance is obvious to everybody, and you have to have it together or you're going to look bad.
The all-time leading NBA scorer, Kareem won 6 championships and 6 MVP awards during his 20-season-long career. And during his time as a pro, he consistently dominated opponents with his nearly unblockable signature move, the skyhook.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Skyhook up and good! Lakers win! Score it! Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has given the Los Angeles Lakers a victory!
But Kareem's work has always extended far beyond the court. In 1980, he starred in the comedy classic Airplane.
Flight 209 into Denver Radio, climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
In recent years, Kareem has been trying his hand at yet another profession, mystery novelist. A longtime fan of Sherlock Holmes, he's written 3 books centered around the famous detective's brother, Mycroft. Tanzina Vega recently spoke with Kareem about his latest book, Mycroft and Sherlock, The Empty Birdcage. And she started off by asking him what he does to channel Arthur Conan Doyle in his work.
When you approach these stories, are you trying to capture his voice in writing, or are you developing your own style in the Sherlock Holmes universe?
Well, you know, for me, I'm trying to be historically accurate about the Victorian age, trying to convey what I know about Victorian England and the fact that I know a little bit about colonial British history because my own family is from a British colony, Trinidad and Tobago. And I've known people from other British colonies. So it's interesting writing about that time period from a different perspective.
One of the main characters in your series is Cyrus Douglas. And you mentioned your family is from Trinidad. Cyrus is a Trinidadian man living in England. Is this a way, Kareem, to make the world of Sherlock Holmes less white?
Well, I think it's a way to be more inclusive as to what that world was. People don't understand that within England itself, people from all over the British colonies had come to roost. People from China and West Africa, Native Americans from Canada, you know, all of these people at some time or another were in England and interacted with British people. And you very rarely see that depicted.
Why was it important for you to do that? I mean, a lot of writers won't do that.
Well, I was just seeing basically my own family. You know, I had family members that went over to England in the late 19th century. One of my relatives became the first doctor to graduate from med school in Scotland. He was a family member of mine, a relative of my grandfather.
Kareem, you are a Renaissance man, if there ever was one, and including among, you know, writing these books in the Sherlock Holmes universe. You've also written in many other places. Most recently, you've been writing for Veronica Mars. How did you end up writing for season 4 of that show?
Well, I just expressed some admiration for the author. He found out about it and he was flattered and invited me to participate. I also did some acting in his other show, iZombie.
Did you like being in the writer's room?
It was interesting. I didn't understand the process, and it really helped me. It expanded just what I know about the writing process now, you know, having to do that, you know, because I didn't understand what they were doing or why. And then, you know, it all made sense, you know, after I'd been doing it for several weeks. It got through, and I'd be a much better and more efficient writer moving forward, having had that experience.
Writers' rooms in general are often places that lack, for lack of a better word, diversity, but really just lack non-white writers. And you're also, in the many things that you do, you're also a columnist for The Hollywood Reporter. And you wrote recently about Walter Mosley's decision to quit the writer's room for Star Trek Discovery. He said he decided to leave after someone complained to Human Resources over his use of the N-word in a story that he was telling about an experience that he had with the police. And I thought that was a very powerful piece. Tell us a little bit about your decision to write about that.
Well, you know, I just think that people really, when they lack perspective, they can make some outrageous statements. And, you know, I thought the criticism that Walter had to deal with was unjustified, and I had to say something about it.
And what is that story? I mean, you've been in a writer's room, you've seen this, you know, this piece by Walter. Where do you think Hollywood is right now when it comes to more representation? Is it going to get better?
You know,
should it get better?
Hollywood has to get better, because look at how, let's take the whole era of Westerns. I grew up on these, you know, I ate it all up, and it is really justifying genocide. And Hollywood did that because, you know, there was some guilty consciences out there as to, you know, what happened to Native Americans actually, and, you know, the way they depicted it on the screen was shameful. So, you know, Hollywood has a duty to be more historically accurate. So, and I'm glad I'm seeing that. You know, we will see a very good movie about Harriet Tubman, finally, after 160 years. It's shameful that it's taken this long for America to understand exactly what happened, but, you know, we're getting there, and I think what's depicted in our popular culture on the screen really goes a long way to helping educate people about certain things. It really is making a difference, and I'm glad to see that people of color are getting opportunities. And, you know, I have to defend someone like Walter, who has been one of the great talents that has fought to get us to this point where our voices are being heard and our stories are being told accurately and in a real context.
Yeah, we're talking about race, and racism, quite frankly, in this country is always a part of the undercurrent of the conversations that we have. But more recently, I think it's become a very overt part of our political process, particularly during and since Donald Trump's presidency in a lot of ways. And that's sort of driven a renewed wave of activism among athletes. I'm thinking Colin Kaepernick, who took a knee, and others who've supported him. And I'm wondering what your response is to folks who say that these athletes should, and I'm quoting here, shut up and dribble or shut up and play, or criticizing athletes who try to make their voices heard.
It's absolutely absurd to expect people not to speak out against injustice that they see. And it doesn't matter. All right, LeBron James has a wonderful job, but he also has seen some very horrible things. And that's why he wore a T-shirt that said, "I can't breathe," because he was relating to what happened to Eric Garner in New York City, who was choked. He suffered an attack by a chokehold that should not have been used on him and subsequently died. Tamir Rice was shot and killed playing in a park in Cleveland, Ohio, where LeBron James played for many years and brought a world championship there. But, you know, he saw something like that happen to Tamir Rice, and he had to say something about it. Some members of the Cleveland Browns football team had something to say about that. And they weren't reacting as professional athletes. They were reacting as the parents of black kids who are worried that their kids might end up being shot needlessly for no good reason. This is a reality in America, and LeBron called attention to it. Colin Kaepernick called attention to this phenomena. You can't blame them for that. And they did it in a way that didn't threaten anybody, and let sports fans know that some of their heroes have serious issues with what's going on in America. I'm happy that they did that. I'm proud of them, and I want them to keep speaking out when it's necessary.
You've also long been outspoken about the issue of pay for college athletes. You wrote a piece that talked about your playing for UCLA, and you said you were, quote, too broke to do much but study, practice, and play. We just did a report here on the show about a bill that recently passed in California, essentially allowing NCAA players to use their likeness in promotional activities, and that's obviously garnered some debate. But do you think that's a step in the right direction when it comes to paying college athletes?
Oh, absolutely, it's a step in the right direction, and I hope these steps continue. You know, when I played at UCLA, the people in the band could get a job and make some money, but I couldn't. You know, it's kind of weird, you know, and what I was doing enabled the university to put millions of dollars in the bank, enabled the NCAA to make millions of dollars. The NCAA now administers college sports and oversees a business that makes many, many billions of dollars. And the people who go out there and sweat and perform the activities that generate all this money, they don't get a dime of it. I don't think that's correct, and I think it has to be a little bit more equitable. I'm not saying that you have to make all these people rich, but for what they do, I think they're being exploited.
We've also talked about pay-for-play sports and how they're becoming more popular, even in grade school, middle school, and high school, and how that's sort of deepening the divide in who gets to play certain sports, or particularly elite sports. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that sort of growing divide, that in inequality for those who have access to sports and those who don't, and those who can afford to join leagues, and that'll get them into, you know, the Olympics or other high profile sports, and those who can't.
Well, you know, opportunity is really the key issue here. So everything that we can do to make opportunity available to the greatest variety of kids, I think is a good thing. You know, team sports really do a lot of good things in our society. You know, they teach conflict resolution and encourage health and teamwork and a lot of really good things. Student athletes tend to be better citizens overall. So, you know, sports has quite a positive place in our society, but you know, we have to try to make it something that is equally available to as many people as we can, and I think that's one of the good things about sports. It forces people to think like this, and the more inclusive we are, the better off we are, I feel.
Before we let you go, you have authored books, you have written for TV series, you're a Hall of Famer. And I'm sure there's so many other things that you do that we don't even know about. Kareem, is there anything that you still have on your bucket list that you'd like to tackle?
Well, just personal stuff, but I'm very pleased that I got a chance to, you know, speak out and be heard on things that we've just talked about, because those are very important. My own personal bucket list, you know, will include, you know, a trip here or there. Maybe I got to go to Machu Picchu or someplace like that, you know. But that's about it. I'm really happy, though, with what's happening with my children. They're living great lives and fulfilling their dreams. And that really makes me feel good as a parent.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is an NBA Hall of Famer and author of the new book, Mycroft and Sherlock, The Empty Birdcage. Kareem, thanks so much for joining us on The Takeaway.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.